Hi, this is Zoe Routh, and this is episode 47 of the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast. And today we're talking about barriers to leadership. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
I love this quote from Cindy Wigglesworth. Plus, I love her name, Wigglesworth. She wrote the book, The 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence, which is all about advanced emotional intelligence. Quite a detailed and profound book, really. And she said this, the development of the organization is limited by the development of the leader. And I think this is so true. The organization can only progress as far as the leadership thinking is mature. And I've seen plenty of organizations which are significantly hampered by the maturity of the leadership thinking. So it's not that they're bad people, it's just they haven't expanded the way that they look and see in the world. And when we're looking at barriers to leadership, our thinking is one of the critical barriers to them. What's also interesting to me about this topic is how much the world has changed and what this means in terms of creating barriers for folks. And expectations of leaders have dramatically shifted. I'm working with two separate CEOs who've been successful in their roles for the last 12 years, and yet their boards are asking them for change, to step up, be different, show up differently, lead differently. And it's quite confronting, you know, because if you've been successful for a decade and now you want me to change, why is that? You know, was everything I've done up to the last 12 years not relevant anymore? And it's not that it's not relevant. It's not that it hasn't been as successful as it could have been. It's just that times have changed. The times, they are a changing. That was my very bad Bob Dylan version. Anyway, I think it's important to look at the kind of things that are driving a different context and need a different kind of leadership. Connectivity is a huge thing. We know this. We are a global, connected world. Messages get tweeted around the world. We're constantly bombarded by these kinds of messages. It's very difficult to escape globalization from a connectivity point of view. And so that means, I think what's subtle about that, though, you know, everybody gets that. Everybody gets that Facebook gives us access, yada, yada, yada. What people don't necessarily realize is that our reputation is non-renewable. And this is a significant threat to leadership. So our reputation becomes a huge currency for us, and we need to look after that as leaders. It's not something that previously to the last 5 years has been that visible or that meaningful. But if you think about the high-profile leaders you've seen stumble and make mistakes, how difficult it is for them to come back from that because it goes global pretty quickly. So that's one area of context I think that has changed for leaders. The second one, and everyone's talking about this one, artificial intelligence and robots. What does this mean for leadership? And there's plenty of industries from retail to manufacturing to construction that are scrambling to keep up with the developments to see how it might impact their business and the future decisions they need to make now in order to fit in with a world filled with robots and artificial intelligence. And so what this means for leaders is that we need more than ever to be abreast of these kind of trends and be able to be so forward-thinking that we don't get caught on the back foot, that we stay proactive on the front foot. So this kind of pressure is quite different than it was 10, 15 years ago, where the expectation of CEOs was to get the ship tight, get the ship sailing straight, and get on with it. Now, you need to have a tight ship and get on with it, and yet you are sailing in completely different seas. I think another trend that is shaping how we need leaders to show up differently are the advents of different kinds of intersections, like the intersection of biology and technology in what I call amplified biology. And one of the most interesting innovations that's surging ahead at great leaps and bounds is, of course, brought to you by none other than Elon Musk. His latest company, Neuralink, is producing or working on an ultra-high bandwidth brain-machine interface. Basically, a little thing that gets implanted into your brain, so you have a direct connection between your brain and a computer. So instead of the connection being through an iPad or an iPhone or a tablet or something like that, a device that you look at, there's the physical object just goes straight connected to your brain. Woo! It's very science fiction, isn't it? And yet that is the kind of world that we are moving into. What does this mean? What does this mean for leaders? How will we communicate differently? What do we need to put in place? No one knows. We don't know how long technology is going to take to get moving and to be adopted. However, it is coming. You know, anything that, this is my belief, anything that Elon Musk does is basically a fait accompli. We're going to get to Mars. We're going to have the brain wizard cap, i.e. the Neuralink, and we're going to have the Hyperloop, which means we get to sit in these suction view. If you haven't seen the Hyperloop, just Google it. It's a major transportation revolution that, again, Elon Musk is spearheading, where you can basically go between Sydney and Melbourne in 30 minutes if this technology gets up and driven. So it's air compression technology. So it sucks you along like really quickly. So if you remember, I'm not sure if you do remember this, if you ever went into a retail store and they put all this cash in a little container and they put it up a chute and sucked the container up, same tech applied to people transportation. So in comparison to other fast things, a plane goes 900 Ks an hour. This is built to travel at 1200 Ks an hour. Yeah, it's fast. And the bullet train in Japan goes 300 Ks an hour. So that just gives you a little bit of differences or comparisons, I guess, to what's coming. So that's all pretty cool stuff. What does this mean for you and your leadership? You need to be across this stuff. And this is where a lot of leaders fall down. One of the barriers to their leadership is not knowing or being aware of this, of these changes, and being able to have the discipline, because it is a discipline, to stay on top of it and then to do the critical thinking around it, which is, that's interesting, and what does it mean for me? How do I need to plan for this? How do I need to incorporate my strategy around this? That's where a huge gap is missing, and it's a huge barrier for leaders to be successful. They need to have that discipline and that ability to make that leap of stretch of in thinking. Forbes recently published, 30th of March, an article called The 7 of the Top 10 Leadership Skills for 2020, which, you know, in 2017, that's this year actually, we're still in 2017, is not that far away. You know, we're basically 2 and a bit years away from 2020. And they said these are the top 7 skills needed in the next 2 years. Professional humility was number one. Like, when have we not ever needed that? I thought that was a pretty lame one to put at the top. So anyway, humility in your professionalism is pretty important. So it means no longer do you have to be a bragging swaggart. Is swaggered, even though it's swaggering braggart, I think is the way that you'd say it. So you don't brag and swagger. You speak with humility about what you do and don't know. That's what that piece is about. Number two is unwavering commitment to the values-based action. So same. I think that's been a perennial one. So I'm not sure why they discuss as one of the top seven needed for 2020. Unless they're speaking to the transparency issue, because leaders have been or being held to be way, way, way more accountable due to transparency because of the global and connectivity nature of things. You need to make every decision from a values-based. Otherwise, you'll be held up for being unethical or sketchy, really. So perhaps that's where that one is coming from. Number three in the top 7 leadership skills needed was 360 thinker. That's what I was speaking to just before when we're talking about major global trends. You need to be able to have multiple perspectives on the plate. And this is a significant leadership maturity shift. Leaders in the past needed to be very sure of their own position and maybe take consultation from the people around them and make enough of a decision based on that. 360 thinker means that you need definitively to understand the perspectives from multiple stakeholders, not just within your organization or your team, but the growing community around you. So the ability to think in a very complex way is one of the big barriers to leaders if they don't learn how to do that properly, which speaks to number 4 on the Forbes list, which is intellectual versatility. Those two things are quite linked. Number 5 is highly authentic and reflective. Now, the reflective piece, that's one of the critical ways to break through barriers, is to actually have a reflective practice as a leader, which simply means at the end of the day, you think about your day, you think, what worked, what did not, how did I show up today, was it the way that I wanted to, how could I improve, what's on my plate for tomorrow. That discipline, and it is a discipline, and practice of being reflective is one of the critical skills leaders will need to break through the barriers in their thinking and their leadership maturity. Number 6 was inspire followership. that is a perennial one too. So I'm going to just say, yep, if you want to be an effective leader, you need to inspire followership, people who want to get on board and work with you towards a project that's worth doing. The number seven is interesting. Be innately collaborative. Collaboration and leadership, it sounds like, isn't that obvious? That's what you do as a leader. You work in with groups of people, therefore you need to be collaborative. Not necessarily. I think the most dynamic leaders and dynamic organizations will have collaboration as one of its nimble skills that allow it to pivot if they get challenged or see different opportunities. That will enable them to jump on trends and be able to stay on the front foot. So there's a lot at stake for leaders. There's enormous amount of pressures out there. And there's some other things that hold us back as well. So I did a survey of my readership recently, and I asked them, what is the biggest obstacle to better leadership for you? And this really shocked me. So the top three in terms of what are the biggest obstacles, the barriers to better leadership for you? Number one, actually, we'll do it in reverse order. We'll do the countdown. Number three is constant interruptions. Well, everybody's sort of nodding their head going, yeah, that's totally one of my biggest barriers, constant interruptions. Number two, staying on top of workload. It's so ironic. All these innovations we've made as a species over the last 20 years have just kept us getting busier and busier and busier. It's supposed to do the reverse, right? Aren't we supposed to have more leisure time and have life be easier? Anyway, irony is what that is. Okay, number one barrier to better leadership, getting enough exercise and rest. That I found gobsmacking, to be frank. I was like, seriously? That's your biggest barrier to better leadership is getting enough exercise and rest? Who's running your life? You need to make that decision for yourself. You need to lead your life first. If your work is keeping you from getting enough exercise and rest, then something is out of whack, i.e. your decision-making around your priority is out of whack. That really bothers me. This is an easy obstacle for us to address. Even the most influential people on the planet make room for exercise. Perhaps Trump is an exception. I don't think he exercises that much. Barack Obama was famous for exercising, and we see our prime minister doing walking and being fit and healthy. Big job means you better do some bloody exercise. So there's no excuse for this one, folks. You need to get control of your life right now. If you're not getting enough exercise and rest, do not lay that at the feet of your job as if you are a victim. You are not a victim in your own life. You are the captain of your own ship. So get that one sorted. You have been served. Now, the other question I asked on my survey was, what is your biggest problem as a leader that needs to be solved? Very interesting. So again, I'll count them down. Top three, number three, dealing with difficult conversations with confidence. Big barrier, big challenge for leaders. I wonder if it is for you. And it's why I always include dealing with difficult conversations as one of the key components to my coaching programs and to my training programs, because we don't get taught this stuff. We don't get taught how to have difficult conversations. And it's hard, even if we are taught how to do it. I still struggle with it, that's for sure. And I have to really breathe and apply everything I know to have them. So it is a big barrier for sure. Number two challenge, producing effective strategy. Yeah, because like I said, there's so many different drivers and variables out there that are changing the context for leadership. How we did strategy 10 years ago has radically changed, and we need to radically change with it. Number one, biggest problem to be solved for leaders, being seen as a visionary leader. Can you believe it? I believe it. It's one of the things that's going to help us feel satisfied in our work is feeling and knowing and being perceived as a visionary leader, somebody who can see what's coming up on the horizon, be able to pick a path through it and guide us safely. Yeah, that's what we all want. So what else gets in our way? Before we talk about that, I think it's important to understand this whole concept of boundless leadership. And it's something that I've been really ruminating on and contemplating a lot about. What is boundless leadership? From my perspective, it's where everything is possible. Everything is possible. And we venture forth from where we are and who we are, and we explore the edges of what is possible for us. OK, because everything is possible, and there's some things that are more possible for us than others. So this idea of boundless leadership is developing a strong core and moving to the edges of who we are and what we're capable of to see what else we are capable of. So it's this movement of deep and centering and expression to the edges. Centering and expression to the edges. And as we go through that movement of deepening who we are, exploring who we are, and moving to the edges of what's possible, discovering more of who we are, our core strengthens. So it's kind of a synergistic pattern, really, of growing stronger and stronger and stronger and moving to the edges where we're more uncomfortable and then getting stronger as a result. So that sounds awesome, right? Well, there's still some more barriers to us there's barriers to us embodying this whole notion of boundless leadership. And the context is one thing. The inner world is another. And one of the key challenges I see that leaders face, or problems and barriers they have, is this whole idea of obligations. And I think that's sort of feeding into this idea that we don't have enough time to do exercise and rest because we have all these obligations. And I want to make a key distinction between obligation and commitment. There is a massive difference. Now, some obligations we sign up for and are good things, like our social obligations. Social obligations such as paying taxes, obeying the law, raising children if we have them. Those are obligations that we dive into. And they feel like an obligation is something that we do that is not necessarily a benefit to us, but a benefit to others. There's kind of a sense of a win-lose or a lose-win proposition in it. The social obligations where we agree to obey laws and pay taxes, it feels like a loss win. However, we agree to that because the loss for us, i.e. paying taxes and money out of our pockets, goes to a greater good, which also serves us back. So the problem with obligations is when it's not one of those social contracts. It's more of a social rule, like something that is a social norm that we feel obliged to fulfill, though we don't really want to. Something like somebody invites you out to lunch and you go, and then you feel obliged because of the social habit of the law of reciprocity to respond in kind and then invite them out for lunch. Like it's kind of one of the social rules we have as human beings. However, if you don't really want to, it's an obligation. It's not something pleasurable. So it feels like a duty. And as soon as it feels like a duty and an obligation, it's a drain and it's a lose-win and you get feelings of resentment and your energy as a human being and as a leader gets really clogged. It gets really heavy. So obligations like that ain't no good. We stay in relationships far too long because of the sense of obligation. We put up with behaviors from other people because of the sense of obligation. What we need instead is to have all of our obligations be actually commitments. So the difference between obligation and commitment is this. Instead of being a social rule, it's a personal choice. So an example of that would be when, let's say you are married and you don't particularly like your in-laws. However, you agreed when you married this person that you would spend time with the in-laws. And it's not that they're particularly bad people or there's anything particularly bad about them, but you'd rather be, you know, chilling out in your own place than going over to have tea with the in-laws. So that might feel like an obligation. And that's really draining. Unless you decide, you know what, I've made a commitment to this marriage and that's part of the deal, so I'm going to suck it up and make it a personal choice. So I choose to be in this marriage. That's part of the decision. I'm going to choose to enjoy this. I'm going to choose to be my best self and not be dragged along to these social family functions. So that might be a personal choice. You might have a different personal choice, which is I'm choosing not to go. Good luck negotiating that. So there's a difference between obligation and commitment. And you really have to be definitive in this, because otherwise you just get weighed down with all these choices that don't feel like your own. So make sure you make everything you choose to do a choice that's yours. Now, the reason we have social commitments in here or social obligations is to keep us from being completely narcissistic and opportunistic. So if everybody just did whatever the hell they wanted, to hell with everyone else, it would not be such a nice society. So that's why we have some social obligations to keep us civilized and progressing as individuals and as communities. So the other commitment, the other difference, I think, between obligation and commitment are the lose-win for obligation and the win-win. So coming back to the in-law situation, it's a win-win, right? So if I choose to show up in a marriage and I choose to be positive and go into the in-laws, you know, because I'm committed to the marriage, I'm committed to the extended family, and it's a win for me. It's because I've chosen to be positive about it. It's a win for them because they get a better version of me. We have better interaction. So that's one way you can switch obligation into commitment and have it be a win-win. So instead of a feeling being resentment around obligation, you can have enthusiasm. Instead of having clogged energy, you have clean energy. I tell you what, I've cleaned up a little bit of my life lately, and I've dropped some relationships and experiences that were obligation. So much better. I feel so much better. You know, I'm made decisions for myself, had the difficult conversations. That was not easy. Even though I know how to do this, it still wasn't easy. I know how to do it. You just need to do it. And the benefit has been enormous. So my energy has significantly improved. I'm way less stressed as a result. I'm being nurtured in my experiences instead of being drained. And I want that for all of you. So I want to talk about a little bit more. So obligations versus commitment is one significant barrier to leadership. Here's another. There's sort of four areas that provide barriers, and they're not context, and they're not obligations or commitments. It's really this internal work. The first area of barriers are around yourself. And there's three sort of sub areas around that. And these are your belief patterns. And I think when we explore them, they're pretty amazing. The first one is around money. Yeah, I know a few of you started squirming already. So this is a limitation for folks for sure. And I hear this all the time in my coaching when I hear people talk about money, or even often they avoid talking about money because it's a social norm not to. And the belief about how much they can earn is a significantly limiting factor in terms of leadership. And I discovered this also when I worked in not-for-profits, is the organization's collective belief around money was severely limiting the organization's ability to move forward. Because if they didn't believe money was a good thing, it's very difficult to attract it, very difficult to use it, and therefore the not-for-profit would struggle and limp along. So this is how you discover it for yourself. Three questions, or three statements, and you fill in the blank. I currently earn, fill in the blank. I would love to earn, fill in the blank. That's your aspirational level, so what you feel is possible and desirable for you. And then this one, I could never earn, fill in the blank. Because when you answer that last one, I could never earn blank, we all have a ceiling where our brain sort of craps out and goes, nah, that's not possible. Or that's not possible for me, or I don't deserve it. All sorts of baggage comes up. That is a barrier. That is a threshold that is keeping you from exploring new edges. So I think that's a fun one to explore. I encourage you to do that little exercise afterwards. Along the self category for barriers in leadership is another one about your impact. How many people can you influence? So you do the same sort of fill in the blank. I currently influence X amount of people per year. And that's kind of an interesting thought. You know, how many people do I influence? Well, I guess there's my family and there's the people at work and there's my clients. So if you count them up, you think that's how many people I influence. And then you can ask the question, I would love to influence X amount of people per year. Aspirational growth in terms of being of service in your work. And then the last one, I could never influence X amount of people per year. And for you, maybe it's I can never influence 1,000 people per year. For some people, it's I can never influence 20 people per year. That is a made-up threshold. The good news about this is when you discover your thresholds, you can break through them, because all you can do is just play with the numbers. You start imagining what it'd be like to impact 10,000 people a year or earn $1 million a year. I know, some of your brains just went snap. All right, then the third question around legacy and barriers around legacy is, you fill in the blank again, I think I will leave a legacy that will impact how many generations? One generation, two generations, three. I would love to leave a legacy that will impact, fill in the blank, generations. Three or more generations. And the threshold one, I could never leave a legacy that would impact, fill in the blank, generations. Just doing this exercise stretches your thresholds about what is possible for you, your identity, and what you could possibly live into. And until we surface these from our subconscious, they just become these hidden barriers. So this work is about surfacing the hidden barriers so we can break through them and create new possibilities, explore new edges for ourselves. So there's some other barriers around thinking, skills, and network that are useful to explore as well. So self was the most interesting one, I think. I think it's the most interesting one. And then building from there, we can think about our thinking. And in thinking, there's three areas to look at as well. There's the duration of your thinking, like what time frames you think in. 3 to 12 months, 10 years, or multiple generations. There's the depth of your thinking. Do you look at the problems? Do you look at the systems? Or do you look at the underpinning values of this of each system? So there's quite a lot of depth when you start thinking about problems like this. Scale. Do you consider the effect of your strategy, for example, that is it local, is it national, or is it global? So if you think about your own context and you think, oh my goodness, what if I did think in multiple generations and I thought about the values of the systems that are at play with this challenge and I start thinking about the effects of this from a global perspective, how different is that kind of thinking than 3 to 12 months focused on problems and the local effects of my business? We all have the capacity to shift our thinking and make a huge difference. These are our barriers that we can dissolve and work through. In the skills area, there's three things to look at: your presence, your execution, not like killing people execution, but your ability to deliver, basically. And the third one is influence. So in those areas, presence is about how often and how deeply you feel present. Execution is about how often and to what degree do you execute on your goals. And your influence is how much you feel seen, heard, and valued. So in your presence, do you feel present each and every exquisite moment of the day, a little bit of the day, or most of the day? And for execution, do you deliver on your goals sometimes, regularly, or do you exceed them regularly? And your influence, do you feel seen, heard, and valued sometimes, regularly, or in nearly every context? And what if you did? What if you did feel seen, heard, and valued in every context? What kind of difference would that make to you? So the fourth area where we can look at barriers is around your network. And I want to reference Janine Garner's fabulous work in her new book called It's Who You Know. Fabulous resource to work on how you can build support in your network. So that's a great resource for you. So when you're looking at barriers in your network, there's who you know, who you can refer, and who's supporting you. And this is a fill-in-the-blank exercise as well. So you can, the first one, I have X amount of contacts I could call on at any time for advice. And then the next area is I would love to have X amount of contacts to call on, and I could never have fill-in-the-blank contacts I could call on at any time or for support or advice. So think about that. Have you ever audited how many people you can actually just pick up the phone and call for advice? It's amazing when you do. You go, holy crap, maybe I need to get onto that and grow my network a little bit, because that is limiting. If you had 50 people you could call on at any given time for advice on any number of topics, how much more resilient and forward-thinking and resourceful would you be? All right, the referring one is all about being an agent that connects people, and that's a significant thing for your reputation. So I refer. How many contacts you can refer happily, how many you would love to refer, and how many you could never refer. Again, this is surfacing your threshold. And the last one is I have X amount of people who support me deeply. I would love to have X amount of people who support me deeply, and I could never have X amount of people who support me deeply. So there you have it, some really cool ways to surface these hidden barriers that are holding you back in your leadership. So we talked about obligation versus commitment, and then we looked at these four areas of self, thinking, skills, and network. And if you started to work on that, you would start to feel pretty darn differently and start to show up differently as a leader for sure. So that's pretty much what I wanted to cover. I saved the announcements to last because there's some pretty cool stuff happening. I've got my leaders, my leadership intensive in Tasmania coming up November 2nd to 5th. Just hop on my website, zoerouth.com, and click on events, and all the details are there. It's going to be a wonderful, intimate group. We're going to focus on big picture thinking strategy for 2018 and getting our personal plans set. The other thing I've got to share with you is that we launched the Unconference. We are now in launch price tickets for the Unconference, and that's happening in March in 2018, next year in Canberra. So again, all the details are on my website under events, and you can get the launch price tickets now. So excited about that. We've changed the venue. We're going to this place called Green Hills. We've got spectacular views. It's going to be really relaxed environment. We've got keynote speaker Craig Rispin coming along, who's talking about the future of work, and we're doing whole day, as well as some preview webcasts on employee experience and building loyalty and the future of work. Well, that's it from me. You have yourself a wonderful day. Live well, lead well.